Hello, it's Tessa, one of the news editors here at Manx Radio, back with you for another episode of Newscast, and this time with an apology. No, not from me, before you start. This apology made on the floor of Timworld by Onken MHK Rob Collister. It marked the culmination of a bullying row concerning the former health and social care minister, the chief minister and the political members, Russian MHK Michelle Hayward, MLC Tanya August Hansen and Douglas East MHK Joni Farragher. And it was a row which erupted after Mr. Collister was sacked from his ministerial post after just 3 months in the job. That sacking and the subsequent fallout saw the matter referred to the Timworld Standards and Members' Interests Committee, which then sought independent input to determine wrongdoing.
When I show visitors around legislative buildings, I usually explain that the people who sit in these seats make laws. One of the hardest questions to answer is, so who makes the rules for the people who sit in these seats? The answer, of course, is that we do. Within parliamentary proceedings, we have a very broad scope for freedom of speech and cannot be brought before a court for defamation. With this great power comes great responsibility. We therefore have to regulate our own behaviour, and we do this under our own standing orders, in which the ultimate sanction that can be imposed by this court is suspension. Outside of parliamentary proceedings, we are of course bound by the same laws as everybody else. However, unlike other parliaments, we have deliberately extended our own rules to cover behaviour outside proceedings, again with the ultimate sanction being suspension. This is a central principle of our parliamentary practice. We regulate our own behaviour. It is one of the hardest things that we have to do. If we do it right, it goes unnoticed. If we get it wrong, we know this will damage the reputation of our Parliament and ultimately the Isle of Man.
That's Duan Waterson, the Speaker of the House of Keys, Russian MHK and Chair of the Committee, addressing Timworld Court on the 21st of March. That committee's investigation, which cost taxpayers £3,000, was sparked by the Chief Minister Alfred Cannon, who asked it to determine if anyone had breached standards. And its findings? Well, it determined that Mr. Collister had displayed inappropriate conduct. The investigation was led by the former House of Commons clerk and chief officer of Jersey State's Assembly, Dr. Mark Egan. He found Mr. Collister had undermined the right to dignity at work of civil servants working in his department. It was also found that Mr. Collister did not act in a manner consistent with the principle of honesty. As for his punishment, well, an apology, and one to be delivered to his political colleagues. The alternative, suspension from the Honourable Court.
I would like to start by thanking the Timworld Standards and Members' Interest Committee, along with Dr. Mark Egan, for the way that they've approached and dealt with this extremely difficult and sensitive investigation around my dismissal as the Health and Social Care Minister back in November 2022. I can assure this court, my Timworld colleagues sitting here today, and the wider Manx community that I've always applied the highest level of openness, honesty, and accountability, along with the other four principles of public life when working on behalf of my constituents in Onken or in government departments or when asked to sit on various Timworld committees on behalf of this honourable court. I will continue to serve the people of Onken in this island with a heartfelt passion, but at the same time holding myself and others to account for those very difficult decisions we have to make as elected members. Mr. President, there are sections of this investigation that I find difficult to accept, but I do fully acknowledge, accept and respect the findings of this court here today. For that reason, I do offer my full and sincere apologies to this court, my Timworld colleagues, my constituents in Onken, and the wider Manx community for breaching Timworld standards and code of conduct. Although the court is not asking me to do this here today, I would also like to offer my sincere apologies to the Chief Minister for the comments I made in this honourable court on the 15th of November 2022. In closing, Mr. President, I would also like to thank my Tynwald colleagues that have spoken so warmly and kindly on my behalf here today. Their continuing support and friendship over the past few months has been immensely appreciated. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Callister. My decision is that your apology is acceptable. I would like to thank you for complying with the order of Tynwald.
His apology there being accepted by Tynwald President Lawrence Skelly. Case closed. Or perhaps not. For what came before that speech was a hornet's nest of questions over transparency of the evidence, claims that DHSC staff had been left in fear, and even thoughts on redemption. Indeed, Dewan Waterson, remember he's the chair of the committee which determined Mr. Collister's wrongdoing, revealed that efforts had been made to informally resolve the row, that attempt clearly failing. The committee found no wrongdoing by anyone except Mr. Collister, although it did ask Dr. Hayward, remember she was one of his political members at the time, to reflect on the appropriate use of language in formal settings. And it appeared she'd taken that rap on the knuckles to heart, apologising to the court for swearing, saying she'd relived and reflected on the events of her former boss's time in post.
I was one of the targets of those allegations in regards to bullying and for having behavioural problems. Therefore, I welcome the report from the committee. The independent external investigator appointed by the committee took both written and oral evidence from everyone involved. He found that no evidence was presented to substantiate any of the allegations that had been levelled at myself or other honourable members. There was no evidence that I or other departmental members engaged in bullying behaviours, nor that we'd been unsupportive or uncooperative. We had not breached the Tynwald Members' Code of Conduct, as would clearly been the case if the allegations had been justified. The real value in commissioning an independent report has already been commented on in this court today about other matters. The value of an independent report is that you can have confidence in the findings are not skewed by pre-existing relationships, past history, or suited to the agenda of one party. I appreciate the detailed and thorough work that was needed from the committee and the investigating officer to get us to this point. I will not pretend that the last few months have been easy for me. I've experienced considerable stress. I've lost sleep. I spent my Christmas break, when I should have been with my family, collating evidence and writing testimony about the events that I witnessed and that I was party to. I felt isolated from some of my Tynwald colleagues, as we were under instructions not to talk about events while investigation was underway. This is a small workplace, and I have felt the relationships shift since the process got underway. The distraction of dealing with these unfounded allegations has been enormous. Throughout this time, I've continued to support my constituents and to carry on my parliamentary and departmental work, but it has been tough. I'd like to recognise the stress and the negative impacts that have also been experienced by others caught up in this situation. All of the witnesses to each of the incidents I reported were interviewed and testimonies cross-checked. None of the incidents we reported happened in isolation. There were witnesses, contemporary notes, and the investigating officer ensured that he was satisfied the events reported to him had actually occurred. There was no he said, she said situation in any of this. The investigating officer was clear that this was not some sort of perverse conspiracy. And although he uses limited examples in his report, there were several other incidents that were discussed. And then overall, there was a picture of behaviours that emerged.
Required standards of conduct for Tynwald members were introduced in 2016, with politicians required to formally sign up to them when they were sworn into office. And in a surprise to some, it was Mr. Collister's constituency colleague who rallied to his defence. Julie Edge raised concerns that those rules hadn't been implemented properly and previous concerns had been ignored, describing the debate over his conduct as a sad day. She said she believed he'd been let down.
I really do feel that Mr. Collister has been let down. The system of this Parliament and the responses that I received from the Tynwald Standards and Members Interest Committee does not, nor indeed should it, work on the same lines as a normal employment disciplinary process or hearing. Yet in this report, we do seem to be referencing employment terminology, which is fine if that is the way forward, but certainly wasn't the way in 2018. I am concerned, as at point 27 of the report, it states the civil servants had not seen inappropriate behaviour from Mr. Collister. So where did this behaviour take place? Perhaps, Mr. President, if we had all seen all of the evidence that had been gathered, I may have that answer.
Hear, hear.
To call a politician dishonest on the evidence I have before me falls short. The report appears to have hearsay evidence and a lot of he said, she said. The civil service don't appear to have followed any of their own procedures. There's processes in place for civil servants to raise concerns about politicians. There's no evidence in the report of a grievance being raised or using the fairness at work process. I would have expected that to happen, and I would have expected any member of staff approaching a politician to be advised of what procedures were in place for them as a civil servant and how to address them, those concerns. I don't agree, Mr. President, that honourable members have then taken that civil servant's complaint forward. There's a process, it should be followed. And that's no disrespect to any of the civil servants involved in this. But again, do our civil servants not know what procedures and policies are in place for them to utilise? And that's really important for all of us, because they should.
And the support didn't stop there. North Douglas MHK John Wannenberg described Mr. Collister as a broken man, saying he was deeply uncomfortable by what he'd seen and heard. His constituency colleague David Ashford told the court there could never be any winners from this situation and called for the evidence in the investigation to be more transparent.
As they say with things like this, there is always two sides to every story, and the truth is always normally, as the old phrase goes, lies somewhere in the middle. And I think it is important that one of the things that's considered by the committee in the future is, as Mrs. Christian has said, being able to provide that evidence, redacted if necessary, so that officers and so on aren't named, but so people can actually see the evidence it's based on and make a judgment for themselves. The example that's being given by Mrs. Christian is what we're seeing across the water in the UK in relation to the former Prime Minister. His 50-page dossier has now been published and is being crawled all over by all the media outlets as to what he's actually said. And so both sides of the story have been able to be put out there so that people can make their own judgments. And I think it is important in a process like this for transparency that those statements, unless there is a very valid legal reason as to why they can't be released, actually are put out there. I just wanted to put on record, I've known Mr. Collister a long time. I remember when he started on Onken Commissioners many, many, many moons ago now, when I was on Douglas Council, and we've worked together both at a local authority level and at a national level, and I have always found him to be an honest individual, an upfront individual, and someone who deeply cares about the people of this island. Most of my family lives in his constituency of Onken, and I know from people I speak to in Onken how much of a highly valued MHK he is, how good local representative he is. And in fact, you only have to look at all the things he's posting up on social media as to the various things that he does to actually feel actually quite dizzy with the amount of work that Mr. Collister actually does out there in the community. So it does deeply sadden me today that we have this report in front of us. And I've always found him to be an upfront and honest individual. But like I say, there is never any winners in a process like this. But I hope that Mr. Speaker and the committee will take on board that I think for future processes, there needs to be that transparency so that everyone can make sure that their views are out there, even, like I say, if it needs to be redacted.
South Douglas MHK Claire Christian also queried why they hadn't been allowed to see more of the evidence used to determine the committee's decision. In addition, she highlighted her concerns with the lack of frameworks in place to allow for meaningful mediation and a lack of support when personal development is identified.
Behaviours that would have been accepted 5 or 10 or 15 years ago are not acceptable now. In many ways, But we also, all of us know, job pressures can have different effects on people because we have different levels of resilience and experience in these matters. None of us are perfect. We can try to be, and we hope to be. But I don't believe that we wake up in the morning and set out to be either dishonest or undermine the right to dignity at work. I have, of course, read the report several times, trying to find clear evidence against what we're being asked to judge today. But I would ask the chair of the Tynwald Standards and Members Interest Committee, what was the reasoning to not publish the members' statements, albeit they might needed to have been redacted? You said in your speech, Mr. Speaker, and chair of the committee, everyone has had their say, but why are we not allowed to see what they said? In comparison, ironically, the former Prime Minister Boris Johnson's just submitted a 50-page dossier of evidence to the Privileges Committee yesterday, which is expected to be published. There is too much in question here for me not to see this evidence. You yourself, Mr. Speaker and Chair, have said what happens next is up to the court to decide, which in my feelings is that means we're being able to either disagree or agree with the findings, which means that we are judging. And I am concerned for all of us that we're doing that without knowing the full evidence.
However, current Health and Social Care Minister Laurie Hooper said revealing any evidence from civil servants involved in this case would lead to their identification. He claimed many were still in fear of repercussions and consequences from Mr. Collister's time in office, saying they don't feel protected.
Even now, having this debate now, staff in my department are still afraid of repercussions, of consequences as a result of this investigation, as a result of this debate. And that is fundamentally wrong. Mm-hmm. And so to stand here and hear people say that we cannot accept testimony of an independent investigator because we haven't seen the individual staff comments and their names on the front page, that to me is dangerous, because we have staff who are being deeply affected by this. As to why they didn't use whatever processes currently exist, it's the same reason. Who puts the head above the parapet when you read some of the behaviours that are described in the report? Who is going to stand up and say, this is me exposing myself to the world in order to make a complaint or blow the whistle? And we've always seen what happens with whistleblowers.
Douglas East MHK and Environment, Food and Agriculture Minister Claire Barber said it was clear things had gone wrong and there had been significant human damage. Whilst Arbury, Castletown and Maloo MHK Tim Glover said he was uncomfortable with the process but conceded it was time to move forward.
For me, what is absolutely imperative though within this for the committee to reflect on is the process. The process to enable people to raise concerns, the process to ensure those concerns are properly managed and coherently managed, and ultimately the process of support. I think it's fair to say that we all struggle at times traversing through what are sometimes challenging roles where not everyone agrees on a number of topics. But what I am absolutely clear on, having been in this Honourable Court for 7 years now, is that every single person that I have encountered in this role is here to do their best. They want the best for the island, they want the best for their colleagues. We don't always go about it the same way, but everyone wants the best. And I think what is really important is that we reflect and take time now to heal and to get back to doing the most important piece of work that we have, which is serving the Isle of Man.
We have to move on. We've got to find forgiveness as well. It's really important as we come away from this, because we've got to work together, because that's what we've been elected to do, is work for the good of the Isle of Man, and we're all in here because people trusted us to do that. And that's what the people of the Isle of Man expect. With all due respect, I know this is very, very personal indeed. It's a sideshow. Let's move on.
Lord Bishop Peter Eagles also contributed to the Tynwald debate, telling members it would always be difficult for the entirety of the truth to be, in his words, untangled. He told the court he had sympathy for those involved and said there were lessons to be learnt about the cost of public service.
for all of us. We are human beings. We know that mistakes can be made. We know that our behaviour can sometimes fall short of what we would wish. And we know, too, that no matter what the truth of a subject may be, it is difficult in a complex set of human relationships for the entirety of that truth to be untangled and to be presented in a way that is entirely unambiguous. I wonder how easy that is. And I'm not going to comment particularly on the individual aspects of the report, although clearly I have read it a number of times. I think I'd want to reflect more perhaps around the duty of what it means to be a public servant, to be called to public office, and to operate in an environment that is sometimes acute and highly charged. I think for me, over these past few years, my time in this Honourable Court has taught me many lessons. And one of the lessons it has taught me is about the cost and the sacrifice of public service. I've had a number of conversations on all sorts of things, I think, with all honourable members here, including those who are most intimately involved in this particular case. And I understand those people to be individuals who are deeply concerned for the community that they serve, who have the confidence of their constituents, and who are called to public office out of a sheer and utter desire to improve the lot of their constituents, to improve the circumstances of human life. Within that, certain things are bound occasionally to happen, to go wrong. We all say words that we sometimes wish we might not have said, and we all receive things, perhaps, that we were meant to receive in a slightly different way. And so as I stand here and listen to the debate this afternoon, I think my overall feeling is simply one of sympathy. It could indeed be me who had misspoken, who had said things that were poorly received or poorly expressed. I've often done that in the past myself. And on that occasion, clearly, we need the understanding and the sympathy of our fellow human beings. And I hope that this afternoon, perhaps, if we're going to speak of lessons learned, as we did in a debate earlier on today, perhaps the lesson that we take to heart is something about the cost of public service, the cost of political life, the circumstances in which we operate, and the fact that for all of us, perhaps, sometimes a degree of sympathy, a degree of concern, and a degree of mutual support is the most important thing in the world.
Concluding the debate, Mr. Watterson said he accepted it had been a remarkably difficult time for all involved and acknowledged that it had been incredibly isolating. He conceded, though, that as politicians, regulating their own behaviour is one of the hardest things to do, but confirmed the evidence of the civil servants involved in this case couldn't be made public.
If evidence of this kind were to be published or even made available to all members of Tynwald, I think the committee believes it would have a chilling effect on future investigations. We would not be able to expect the same kind of cooperation in the future, and it would, in our opinion, leave any prospect of whistleblowing in absolute tatters. So that is our fundamental reason for not doing that. A lot of the documentary evidence provided relevant context, but it was not critical to the standards issues that were engaged.
And it wasn't a unanimous vote when it came to politicians pushing their buttons to show support for the report and its findings. In the House of Keys, 15 MHKs voted in favour, with 8 voting against. The noes, including Anne Corlett, Chris Thomas, Julie Edge, Claire Christian, Rob Collister himself, Jason Morehouse, Andrew Smith and John Wannenberg. In the Legislative Council, just the Bishop voted against. And as for Mr. Collister, who has maintained he doesn't think he will ever accept the investigation report as printed, it seems sorry wasn't the hardest word after all. You can read the full Tynwald Standards and Members Interest Committee report. They need an acronym for that committee, don't they? At manxradio.com. You'll also be able to hear more from Mr. Collister on Agenda on the 27th of March.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Little Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.